Niskei Rosh, which is one of the, when we're doing Niskei Shechinim, one of the many different types of nezek that can take place. And though I don't live in the Heights currently, I did live in the Heights for some time, and I believe anyone who's lived on Washington Heights is acutely aware of the nuisance of Niskei Rosh, of various disturbances out in the street or in the hallways. And so I personally felt attached to the topics I wanted to talk about it. Because I do think there's something really interesting to talk about, and it's a good example, I believe, from my learning of various Niskei Shchinim, of some of the principles that keep coming up in all different Niskei Shchinim. So just to give you a few like very practical examples, in America, I'm not going to focus too much on American law, because American law is very different, since it's very much controlled by zoning boards, and there's certain municipal rules that control what happens. It comes up a lot more within specifically communities that are more insular, like it happens in Muncie a little bit, and Kiryas Yoel, and a lot in Israel, where it comes up a lot. So just like a classic examples that come up, questions of if your air conditioning is a very loud ex unit that's outdoors, or what if you have kids who are very, very loud, and you're sensitive to noise, or you live right next to like a wedding hall of some sort. So these are the type of examples that come up, and there's,
No
whole
phone boxes.
boom boxes. Yeah, there are whole sorts of these. There's like a huge number of
85.
chuvos about this that I don't want to focus on too many of the details, because there's just so many, but we'll get kind of to more of the Ikarim and the way that post-game tend to follow it. So the main sugya comes up is the Gemara in Bava Batra, Daf Chav, where the Mishnah there says as follows, Ma'anitim, source number one, Chanut shebachatzer yachol limchot biyado v'lomar lo, en yachol lishon mikol hanechasim mikol hayotzin. If you have a store in a courtyard, then you can protest, the neighbors can protest that they cannot sleep from the noise of those who enter and those who leave the store. Aval osei kelim yotzei u'mocher b'toch hashuk v'ein yachol limchot b'yado v'lomar lo, ein yachol lishon, lo mikol hapatish v'lo mikol harchayim v'lo mikol hatinokot. However, you are allowed, you cannot protest about some noise that comes about from some type of banging of a hammer or from some other noises. The Gemara asks, "Maishna reishta, maishna seifa." What's the difference? That in the beginning, the Gemara says that you can be mocha, and in the seifa, the Mishnah says you can't. And the Gemara's answer first quotes Abaye. They were talking about different chatzar. I'm going to skip Abaye's position for today's chaburah, since it'll take us a little bit afield. Although maybe we'll come back to it. Amalei Rava, yihachi litni chatzar cheret mutar elam Rava seifa atan litnoko shel vid Rabban and betikanat Yoshua ben Gamal elam. The end of the Mishnah is talking about specifically the lo mikol tinokot. It's not referring to any random people coming in or any children coming in. It's specifically children coming in to learn Torah, specifically after the Takana of Shuv ben Gamla, where they decided at Takana that there would be certain infrastructure created for Talmud Torah for children in various localities. What the Mishnah or the Gemara ends up concluding then is that we differentiate between tinokot and other cases. But what ends up still being unclear is that you have, in effect, in the Mishnah, three different cases. And it's not entirely clear what's the difference between the three cases. The first case the Mishnah lists is this case of kol hanichnasim u'mikol hayotzim, the people who come in and out of the storefront. The second case of the Mishnah is you yourself are using your house or your chatzer as a form of like a merchant's like workshop. You're building something there, a craftsmanship, and that seemingly seems to be mutar. And then you have the third case of kol tinokot, and kol tinokot seems to be a distinct case from the case of the craftsman, because it's you don't that the context really doesn't apply to it. So how do we deal with these kind of three different cases? So most Rishonim, almost by and large, all Rishonim seem to focus agree that when it comes to the first case, the case of being moche on some type of storefront being open and the noise coming in and out, that there not only can you be moche, but even you might not even be able to have a chazaka. Even if someone were to have opened up the storefront and had it for many years, you still be able to moche. You wouldn't be able to have the Tohen wouldn't be able to argue, no, I had a chazaka, and can be able to. A chazaka wouldn't actually hold. Hagot Ashrei disagrees, but that's the position of most Rishonim. Likewise, the third case is rather more simple in some ways about the children. It has a whole interesting discussion that comes up in terms of other mitzvot. I don't really think we're going to have time to get into that, but I want to focus for a second on the second case. What is so different about the second case that in the case of a craftsmanship. If you're building your own, workshop, you're a carpenter in your home, that's mutter. Why is that different? So broadly speaking, the Rishonim give four or five different approaches to explain this particular question. Number one, the position that the Rashba and the Ramban both suggest, which is to say that kind of based on this question, they end up concluding that the word kol, the talk about of noise, discussion of noise here is itself lav dafka. We're not actually talking about noise. Instead, we're really talking about just people entering and leaving a store. And so this whole thing has nothing to do with noise at all. I'm not sure it's yeah, it's kind of like a dat yachid in that sense that it's kind of obvious the whole sugya for us, but it is one of the major shita present. The second position is the position that I think the Meiri best exemplifies, where he argues that the difference is, and I'm reading from source number three, is that. It seems, at least the way I would read the Meiri, is that what he's primarily differentiating between the two cases is that in the case of someone who is opening a storefront, that there he seems to be focusing on the fact that it's not necessarily the normal behavior that or certainly you're fully capable of opening a store out in the marketplace, right? Adam asu yoter limkor bashuk. It seems like you can do so, or even maybe it's more typical behavior.
So the designer that it'll cost him far more to pay rent, utilities, in the storefront than out of his home. That's not relevant.
Yeah, that's not that not certainly that's not certainly that's not the point that the Meiri is making, at least at this point. Here it seems to be the Meiri is making just a question of like what most people do. Do most people sell or do this particular profession in their home or this particular noise making thing in their home, or do they do it out in the street in the shuk? That seems to be the Meiri's distinction here. It's not, I think you can touch a little bit here or there, but that seems to be the way he says it. It's certainly the way that the Chazon Ish, in the way the Chazon Ish is definitely understood, and we're going to come back to this Chazon Ish multiple times because it's going to really define the way that most Bati Din in Israel look at this whole sugya. But the Chazon Ish commenting on a position of the Rivash that we're going to come back to in a little bit in some time, but the Rivash makes a certain significant limitation in the sugya, to which the Chazon Ish disagrees, or he himself qualifies the Rivash, and he says, "Im oset dvarim shirov bnei adam osim." ולפעמים תשמישם ודיבורם משמיע קול שמפריע את החולה, אינו יכול למחות אף אם החולה קודם. ורשאי אדם לבנות בית אצל חברו ולהכניס את עוללים והיונקים שצועקים בלילה, ואין חברו יכול לעכב עליו, דהרי אינו חייב לצאת מדירתו. The Chazon Ish makes this principle rule that anything which is done in the home, which is typical behavior, typical things done in the home, שרוב בני אדם עושים, you're allowed to do in the home. And despite the noise it makes, even if it makes seemingly a lot of noise, like children that are screaming middle of the night, certainly if you've ever been on an Elal flight, you know that children, that babies can be very loud. It can certainly be very disturbing. And yet the fact that it's normal behavior, no one says that they have to leave the home. So that itself is the chiluk that the Chazon Ish makes, which I think is fairly consistent within the position of the Meiri. Maybe slight differences, but overall, that seems to be the consistent view between the two. There is a similar view. It's a little bit different, which is why I quoted it different. I put it in a separate category. But there is a similar view that the Maral Bach, and then it's quoted by the Chatham Sofer, and then the Chatham Sofer himself is quoted by the Petrei Tshuva, that they seem to differentiate the case a little bit differently. The Maral Bach has the whole long Tshuva about this case, and he ends up concluding at some point, he reads this into Shitat Rashi, even though it's really a different explanation than Rashi's explanation. But his explanation at some point goes as follows. If you want to take a look at the second paragraph on page five, on source number five, he says, "Bazech look, demashe omer eni achol lishon machmata kol lo bari hezeka, aval mikol makom hechi deefchar letikune matkininan, velachein yish l'rashut lasot melachto bebeito l'arviach parnasato, velo ite dimche biyade." So the Marlbach makes effectively like a two-pronged argument. First, he points out that the Nezek we're speaking about here is not Bari Hazeka. This isn't, he doesn't really define exactly how he's using the word Bari Hazeka here, but it's not clearly defined Nezek. It's not clear that you're creating this Nezek. It's not fully defined. This isn't certainly standard Nezekian. I mean, yeah, is it type of Grumma? He's not really, doesn't really go into it exactly, but it's certainly not, Adam, Hamazik. That's certainly not what it is. And number two, his argument seems to be stating that the difference between the case in the Mishnah, whether you're allowed to be mocha or not, depends upon whether or not there is an alternative. If, although it's true that you're not really damaging, you're not really doing anything wrong, because you have an alternative, and the tkunim matkininan, we as the Beit Din, we can come up with some form of resolving societal issues. We can suggest that you go somewhere else. So because of that, the Rivash, the Marlbach, sorry, ends up suggesting that that's why you have to go somewhere else. If, though, in a situation like the like in the carpentry, where you have no other place to go, so there it sounds like that's why you're allowed to stay put. So in effect, it's, he's admitting, conceding that we're not really concerned here about direct nezek, because that's not really what's happening. But nonetheless, you really do have a right to stay in your home. But Beit Din is almost like imposing this external pressure that we want to kind of fix and harmonize society as best as possible. The way this plays out very clearly is the Chatam Sofer then quotes this same tshuva, a few hundred years later. And his case is actually almost a reverse case, because there he's talking about a case where brothers split up a Yerusha, and the person who owns the top half of the house is selling some type of wine or other alcoholic beverage. And there, even though it's a storefront, which ostensibly seems to follow the rule, at least according to Sibur and Mishnah of storefront, therefore it should be out in the shuk, because the way the Chatam Sofer explains it, when it comes to something like selling these type of beverages, there's something inherent or necessary in the business where people can sit down, they can enjoy the drinks, they can sit down and, and schmooze and talk. And that can't really be done out on the street. It really can only be done well in the home. And so the Chasam Sofer says, because of that, since you really don't have an alternative, we're going to therefore say that it should be in the home, and not we're not going to force the guy to leave the home and find, move his business elsewhere. So there in the Chasam Sofer, we kind of see an example where taking the same logic of the Marlbach of question of what can you do, if, or is it necessary? And he's saying that yes, it is necessary in this case, and therefore you don't have to move. But otherwise, in terms of societal, arrangement, ideally we would indeed want you to move. There is finally, I want to quote, I guess, two or three last other options, and kind of explain a little bit the difference between them. But there is a few other positions that Rishon take. There's a position that is not fully explicit within Rashi or Tosfot, but this is the way that I personally believe, and many other Achronim seem to suggest it, which is that there could be the difference between the cases in Mishnayot, in the Mishnah, is a question of who is making the noise. That the Mishnah is differentiating between a situation where the owner of the home, or maybe a person who is a domestic within the home, is making noise, and that's different from guests or some other people who are entering the property and are making noise. So, for instance, Rashi in the Sugya mentions in like one liner as part of his commentary, he says, there's number eight, Seifa Tam Snokas Beit Rabban, Ve'afagav Dekol Haba Machmat Achirim Lo Masi Michuye. Even though the noise is coming from others, you can't be mocha, meaning that specifically he's harping on the fact that Tinoko Shel Beit Rabban is an exception to the general rule of Machmat Achirim, and therefore, because it's specifically by children for learning Talmud Torah, they can make the noise, but otherwise, anything that seems to be out of the ordinary, that people are not from the home are coming to make noise, then that would be a problem. Tosfos, source number nine, a later Tosfos on the same daf, seems to make a similar argument where he says, this is the second line there, Yishlomar demanitin beose la'asmo, behaka begirdi haose la'achirim, de'ika nichnasim v'yotzin. The difference is whether you are making the business for yourself, or whether or not you are, I guess, fashioning things for others such that others are coming in and out. Not entirely clear what the problem is there. You could, argue that problem there is not is the question of the business model, not solely the question of the noise. But certainly within, you know, this view, it would, it, you know, certainly one way of reading Tosfot is to say that's consistent within this view of Rashi, that the difference here is between whether or not you are making the noise, the property owner or the domestic who's living in the home, versus someone else. What's the difference? Why should someone in the home be able to make noise versus someone who's not in the home not be able to make noise? So the Nisivos gives one suggestion. He suggests as follows, this is source number 10. So the concept of chazaka here, we're going to come back to. That's about the shita of the Rambam that we'll come back to in a few minutes. But the distinction that the Nisivos here is making is that, in effect, you can't compare the noise or the type of noise that's made by someone building as a carpenter versus the noise of a store owner. Because the carpenter or the person who's making noise of that sort, that noise is fairly consistent. Yes, the noise isn't, you know, it does stop, like you don't, you know, you do take breaks at night, but it's the same noise, the same clacking noise comes up every day, day after day. And there's a certain amount of custom to it. There's a certain amount of sense that this is, you know, what you are doing typically. As opposed to someone who comes in from the outside, that's a noise which varies dramatically. And because of that variability, the Nisibos is arguing that there's no chazaka that can be created. And arguably, you could extend that same type of argument that on a practical level, when it comes not only to creating a chazaka, but even the variability to be mocha, when it's something which is very consistent one after another, and you keep doing it over and over again, maybe that's the type of right to property that you have on your property. It's something that you do, as opposed to something which varies dramatically from time to time. I personally, I'll be honest, I don't love this particular reading of Nisivos into this reading of Rashi, but this is the way that some Achronim want to read it. I think it's a little bit stretched. Instead, what I'd like to suggest, and I think it's it fits a lot better within this type of argument, is to say that it's not so much about this practical distinction between whether or not the noise is constant or different or not, but there's something more essential happening here in this sugya. We haven't really talked about kind of the essential principles here, but when it comes to Niskei Shechinim, one of the major questions is, you know, why, you know, what is happening in this case, Shechinim? Why can't you cause these damages, or what exactly is the concern here? And so we're going to go into this a little bit more a little bit later, and I'm sure we're going to spend, you know, the rest of this Zman talking about this over and over again. But certainly, one particular approach focuses very much in terms of the question almost of what property rights, like what is the right of the owner of the property as well as the neighboring property? What are their rights to their quiet, you know, block or block neighborhood? And so it seems that you could make an argument that, of course, when it comes to your own property rights, it's possible that you have certain rights that you can't necessarily confer upon others. Yes, it's true that in theory, as an owner of any property, I have a right to bring guests into my home. But maybe the amount of noise that my guests can make is not necessarily the same type of noise or the same type of right that I have when myself can, you know, make my own noise in my own home. That there's a certain amount of property rights when it comes to myself that's kind of signed off on when I buy property that I can't necessarily transfer upon others, even the, when they're my guests.
Daughter, years, and I don't know whence the demand came, but there were instructions, and by the way, that neighbors moving downstairs were elderly. They could not stand any children's noise. They insisted that they put it under the carpet, wear thick padding, so that there'd be no stop-stopping kids at all. And which I thought was rather reasonable, because kids stop.
Yeah,
And
so I will talk about the sick part in the in like yeah in like a half hour or so. Don't want to come back. That's the position of the Rivash. Yeah, I mean, I think there the question it seems to be a question of like what you can do to stop it a little bit in terms of reasonability as well as children. I'd point out, I'm assuming are you know Rashi himself is talking about Asmo versus Achirim, but I'm assuming children who live in the home are part of Asmo. They're domestics. They live in the home. No one's arguing that they're distinct from the you know you don't have to be the household owner in order to make noise, and no one else can make noise. Anyone who lives in the home can reasonably make noise in a way that doesn't necessarily extend to your ability, you know, among your bundle of rights as an owner, that you can't necessarily extend that right to guests or people who are coming in to buy certain merchandise from you. So, I think that would be probably a more, conceptual or essentialist way of differentiating in this position. For Rashi, again, you can't explain it more, the practical sense of nocebo is a question of, how much noise or how disturbing the noise is. Is the noise, constant or keep changing? But that's certainly one way to explain it. Yeah.
Just enough different approaches you might lead to an afternoon of a baby being born. They don't have a chazaka. They may be asthma, but they don't have any chazaka. They're born into this. If it's the chazanish, this is normal. That's normal that they should have a child. It's a chazaka they don't have. They when they you can't say you could say savar kabel. I was thinking chazaka this many people, and there's no chazaka for extra people. They didn't exist. That's a nafkamina. That's enough
community. Yeah, but it's normal usage of a young
that,
couple who's in.
Is that a svara that you're saying?
It certainly does come up in some way. We've been talking about, not in terms of noise, really, this question of like nichnasim v'yotzim. I imagine there's going to be at least one or two kabbalas, if not multiple, on this topic again and again, because it comes up. It's like the entirety of Kuf Nun Hey or Kuf Nun Vav in some way. Not the entirety, but it's one of the major topics within those simanim. So I'm sure we'll come back again. It does come up in terms. It's an interesting question. Certainly, Chazanish, I agree with you 100%. The way that everyone thinks with Chazanish, it's normal to have children. Within the question of the household, at least the way I was explaining Rashi, well, maybe that might be interesting in terms of the way you put it. Between it might be enough for me between, I guess, the way the more practical concern that I was saying the Nisivos has versus the more conceptual essential argument I was making, where you could argue that if it's the more practical concern, so maybe there you're right. Maybe in fact, it's a new change. It's a new noise that wasn't here present before. That may be different in terms of how we deal with this machar or in terms of chazaka. We'll come back to chazaka itself in just like a few moments. We come back to the Rambam. But according to the more essential conceptual reason, you could certainly argue that part of being a household owner is you're allowed to, increase your household within reason. And one of the ways to increase your household is to have children. You can also adopt children, you can, have your own children. That's certainly a very typical form of behavior, and that's an expected right within every property owner that they're allowed to, have their own household.
That's Is it a din in the right of the owner, or is it a foreseeability of all the neighbors?
Yeah, well, that would certainly be part of way of differentiating one way of differentiating it. Well, if it's a question of foreseeability for the neighbors, then that's obviously much more practical. Yeah, we'll come back. Actually, that actually comes back more explicitly in the Chatam Sofer at some point. We'll come back to that. That's an interesting position about the foreseeability of neighbors.
Mentioned about pets.
Yeah, pets. You know what? Actually, I'll be honest. I did not see too many poskim talk about pets. It's possible they're there. I imagine that in Mea Shearim it's not so common. What? Cats. But I don't think cats are pets in Israel. I said pets. Pets.
They're happy.
Yeah.
Everybody.
But it is interesting because I think in American law, I'm not the lawyer in this room, but domestic. We might, within American law, pets are considered to be part of the domestic household to some extent. I'm not sure within halacha that's necessarily true the same way. In some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. Like things for like mechirat chametz or other things. But it's definitely an interesting nafkamina type case. Okay, well, to think about, we can add a sniff to the Haredi Mea Shearim, cases. Okay, so that's a different way of looking at the sugya. Finally, before we get to the Rambam, the other type of distinction that people make is between what parts of the chatzer are we speaking of? Where exactly is the noise taking place? So if we take a look at the Mordechai, it's probably the most explicit Rishon who mentioned makes this point. So the Mordechai says, Nir Levinu Yoel, source number 11, Nir Levinu Yoel, Dafka bechanut shelo yachol atakin bimlachto ba'al korcho, aval bechatzer, amrin aperek chayeses kezbatim, the whole shufin me'akmin zedzeh, chutz minak he differentiates between where exactly is the noise coming from. Is the noise coming from within your store or within your home? Or instead, is the noise coming from within the chatzer, within the courtyard? Indeed, this actually seems to be the most explicit psak of the Ramah. There's a little bit of debate exactly how the Ramah is paskening, but it seems to be really what the base of the Ramah is, because the Ramah, when he comments on his shita, he says, source number 12, Yesh omrim the chol ma'aseh osei b'chanuto u'bebeito, Whatever's done in your house and in your store, you can't be mocha, as opposed to, which I cut out here, and you can see later the Shulchan Aruch, where the Shulchan Aruch had been mechaber, I've been talking about the chatzer. So he seems to be differentiating between the chatzer versus the chanut and the bayit, where in the chatzer you can't, you can be mocha, but in the chanut and the bayit you cannot be mocha to noise that is created there. That argument is likewise made as well within the Sma. The Sma is pretty explicit about it. He says, source number 11, Shekein hamake v'patish v'beito v'chanuto, ein hashchenin yicholi ma'ake v'ma she'adam osir v'beito, ma she'eno kein b'din marishonim, she'echnasim v'yotzim v'akomen, hu b'chatsim u'shtetefet l'kulam, mishum hachin yicholim l'chot bo m'lasot lehem nezek b'chatsiram. Similar distinction between where exactly is the nezek happening. In terms of, you know, Svara, I don't believe it's one that's such a hard one to understand, that in effect, although, you know, you certainly may be also the owner of the chatzer, you certainly are less of an owner of a chatzer, or it's a shared ownership in a way that's not true about the home. And so in terms of the way that halacha deals with, you know, property rights, at least according to this reading, you know, maybe you have the right to make whatever noise you want, at least according to, you know, take this to the extreme. You can make whatever noise you want within your own property. But when it's shared property, even if it's shared just with a few people, so at that point, we're going to be more limited in terms of what noise you can make, or at the very least, they can be mocha and protest and not, you know, allow you to make that noise if they, you know, would like you not to. What's interesting about this shita is that the Nesivos makes a claim that this shita of the Sma doesn't work with the position where he's commenting. We're going to get to the Rambam in just a second, but the Rambam is going to differentiate between a case of whether you're me'akev, mocha, when there's a chazaka or there isn't a chazaka. Rambam brings the whole question of chazaka, you know, back into the fore here, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch ends up poskening. We're going to get to exactly that argument in just a few moments. But Nesivos effectively wants to argue that whole argument doesn't make sense. According to the Sma's argument, meaning the Sma was arguing that the way the Shulchan Aruch ends up differentiating is that in a situation where you have been making this noise for a long time and you have something of chazaka on it, so then, at least according to the simple reading of Shulchan Aruch, you can't be mocha, as opposed to when you the noise is the new noise that has no set chazaka yet, then you can indeed be mocha. That's the way that the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rambam, ends up paskening. So the Sma, right, his argument had been to differentiate between inside the house versus outside the house, and Nesivo said it doesn't really make sense to, you know, make that distinction. If you're talking about distinguishing between macha in general, but whether it can be mocha noise, it makes sense to differentiate between being mocha and noise that's inside the house versus outside the house. What do you as a neighbor have, you know, the right to do? But once you're talking about not about macha here, but we're talking about really what type of who, when, or where do you get a chazaka, it doesn't really make sense to say that you can always protest inside or outside the house, but inside the house you get a chazaka, outside of the house you can't get a chazaka. That's the way that the Nesivos challenges, you know, the Sma. That's why he wants to reread, and instead he suggests that the answer for this particular Rama is not the explanation of this explanation, but rather the explanation we gave, you know, a little bit earlier that we quoted in the Nesivos a little bit earlier. So that's, you know, the Nesivos' argument. I don't know if that was made clear, but he's effectively arguing that the Sma doesn't make sense. The argument, the friendship between inside the house versus outside the house, that inside the house, you know, you can protest versus outside you can't, that doesn't make sense when you're talking about chazaka. It does not make sense to say that you can be mocha about noise everywhere, whether the noise is inside the house or outside the house. But if the noise has been going on for quite a while, then if the noise has been going on for a while outside of the house, you can still be mocha. No chazaka has been created. While if it's inside the house, chazaka can be created. That's the Nesivos' argument, which is why he rejects, you know, the Sma's application here. La'aniyut da'ati, I would argue that I'm not certain that's so true. I think you could make a fairly reasonable argument that even when we talk about rights you have in the house versus outside the house, that might still affect a question like a chazaka. That when it comes to a chazaka, something in the house maybe can be created. Maybe there, when it comes to the way that we think about your property rights, maybe, you know, your property rights are somewhat limited because your neighbors have certain impositions they can pose on you in terms of the noise you're making. But if you're very loud, sorry, but if you've been doing it for many years, then they've either been mokal or they've been vater, their you know, their ability to protest in some ways, and you've, you know, retaken ownership of that right in a way that maybe you can never really get that chazaka when you're outside. And indeed, he's not explicitly talking about it. He's talking about a slightly different looking at this case. But the Beit Yosef quotes, in fact, in Muke Yosef, who indeed differentiates between types of hezek that are inside the house versus outside the house in terms of like making a chazaka. And he says that inside the house you can make a chazaka, outside the house you can't make a chazaka. To be clear, in source 15, that Muki Yosef, he's not talking about noise, he's talking about something else. He's talking about nichnasim v'yotzim, which is a different problem. But I believe the same type of argument can be made, that it's not just that when it comes to your own property rights, not only is it true about the, you know, you can differentiate between your ability to be mocha inside the house or outside the house, but even the ability potentially to be for an owner, property owner, to, you know, acquire a chazaka, that also can differentiate between inside the house versus outside the house. All right, one last Rishon view that appears in the sugya, which is relevant because the Shulchan Aruch ends up passing this way, which is the view of the Rambam. The Rambam says as follows, source 16, Chanut shebechatzer yecholin hashchenin limchot biyado v'lo marlo ein anu yecholin lishan mikol nichnasim v'yotzim ela otzim lachto bechanuto mocher v'shuk aval einan yecholin limchot biyado v'lo marlo Ain anu yecholim lishan mikol apatish mikol rechaim sheharei hechzik la'asokein. The difference for the Rambam seems to be a situation whether you have a chazaka. In a situation where you have been making this noise for quite some time, how long is quite some time? There's a little bit of a debate. The Sma, I think it's quoted in verse number 21. The Sma thinks it does not necessarily mean chesked kimol shanim. Chazaka here just means a lot of usage. I'm sure in other chaburas we're going to come back to this in terms of creating a chazaka for certain things, for all nizikin. It comes up, this is like, yes, throughout Niskei Shechenim, we know how long a chazaka is, but either way, you make a chazaka, however the duration is, and if you have that chazaka, according to Rambam, that's the case where the neighbors can no longer protest, and you are allowed to keep making the noise. If, however, you're starting a new noise, you have no chazaka yet, then indeed you wouldn't be able to have a chazaka. That's the way that the Rambam seems to be understood by most poskim. What's interesting in terms of this question is that here too, within the Rambam's position, you have a similar debate that we had, you know, we talked about position of Rashi in the house versus outside of the house. A similar type of debate seems to come up between the Magid Mishnah and the Sivos. It's not fully explicit, but the way that they explain the svar of the Rambam, it seems to come out that way. Because the Magid Mishnah, when he explains what the svar for the Rambam is, he says towards the bottom, the source 17, he says, Kavan ta Mishnah, b'shehichzik lastokein b'melachto u'b'chanuto, v'odianu she'afilu hichzik en chazkato chazaka, etal en chnasim v'yotzim shehen achirin. The reason that when it comes to other people, that it's not a chazaka, you can't have this chazaka, is because they are others. They are not part of your household. Seemingly, the Magid Mishnah seems to be following the kind of the more essential rule that I was arguing within Rashi and Tosfot we're making, that there's, you know, we make a property distinction, we take in terms of property rights a distinction between owner and, you know, a domestic versus guests or, you know, other people who come for the commercial purposes. That's a little.
I think back up in the Rambam, one is a chanut in the chatzer.
Yeah.
Parallel. The other one is, doesn't say where the chanut is. Okay, is he assuming the Rambam is assuming the chanut is in the chatzer? It's just that you're not having people coming in and out. You're doing your malacha inside the chanut, but then you're like taking your goods to the shuk and you're selling them in the shuk, and they're.
So there's a little bit of ambiguity in terms of like what exactly the sheet of the Rambam is. I mean, not everyone agrees. Not everyone agrees to this particular interpretation. I think this is by far the Mishnah case. I think it was Magid Mishnah suggesting, which is that the Rambam's differentiating. The Gemara itself is unclear. The Mishnah is unclear what the distinction between the first case and second case is. So the Rambam said the distinction is between whether or not you have created a chazaka or not. Have you created a chazaka? Right? That's the way he says it.
Where have you created the chazaka?
The difference between what's licensed and certain. The first line, no chazaka. Second line, you have chazaka.
Right. Yeah.
And why?
He doesn't tell you why. Presumably, it just happened over time. Presumably, you just have it over time. But you are right that there's also distinct. There are two distinctions between the first case. There's the store versus the noise, like what type of noise we're talking about, as well as yes, it is what's a little bit confusing in the Rambam, and it creates like its own like side discussion within like some of the acronym that kind of like surrounds this issue. Although I didn't see actually too much on this, which surprised me. Kind of people like assume they're talking about the same explanation for the Rambam, even though it's a little bit different. Yeah, it is a little bit different. So those are really kind of two different types of distinctions. What I wanted to point out was that even kind of regardless of you know particular way you're reading this, the explanation that the Achronim give for this position is a little different between the Magid Mishnah and the Sibos. The Magid Mishnah talks about the question of like who's coming in or who's making the noise, and therefore you can have a chazaka or can't have a chazaka. While within the Sibos has it, is the Nesibos has this argument of you know whether it's like a new noise or like a variable noise or it's like a constant noise. Where a variable noise or constant noise, that sounds almost like a practical question. It sounds for the Nesibos that in terms of a chazaka, you can't create a chazaka for something that keeps changing. Something which is constant day in, day out. It's the same exact noise over and over again. At some point, you know, 3 years in, you can't all of a sudden go to your neighbor and be like, hey, you stop making that noise, the guy can say, what do you mean? I've been making this noise for the last 3 years. It's exactly the same noise as before. But, you know, if it's a constantly changing noise, you know, maybe that would be different. You wouldn't be able to make that same chazaka. That's the way the Nesibos has it in terms of distinction. I think the Magid Mishnah is a little bit more essentialist in terms of the question here being not solely about is the noise new or different, but rather is the noise something which is being done by, you know, people who live in the home versus people who are coming from the outside. An interesting, sorry, I had something I want to say here. No, okay, we'll come back to that later.
I haven't gotten too much into the limud yet, so forgive me if this is elementary, but it seems like most times chazakas on a property are against the entire world. But here it's variable. It depends on it's a chazaka vis-a-vis the people who are new, but not if they were already there.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really want to go into too much of this because this would be you know more of like an intro in this case than anything else. But yeah, I mean, this is, I'm sure like we're gonna have to talk a bunch of this, but in terms of like chazaka, what niski shchenim is, and is niski shchenim the same thing as nizikin, or is it like a whole separate set halachot of hilchot shchenim? I was reading in American law. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I was trying to read just a little bit of sense of like how like different legal systems like conceptualize this. Apparently, in most legal systems there is no like separate treaties of neighbors' laws. There is like there are some cases where neighbors' disputes come up. And they're, you know, often nuisance. Right, but nuisance is not necessarily between you and a neighbor. It's not there's something unique about you versus your neighbor. It's you versus everyone else who is making noise out on the streets. It just happens to be you live proximate. As opposed to I think you can argue when I'm sure we'll talk about it, that when it comes to Hilchot Shchenim, it seems like the Torah, you know, the way that the Torah, or certainly like the way the Rambam has like its whole separate halacha of Hilchot Shchenim, seems to argue that there seems to be some, you know, something unique about Shchenim that's a little bit different than, you know, just Rishus HaRabim.
Somebody who lives two doors down is also
Shchenim. Yeah, so I want to come back to that in a few minutes, but there's certainly an interesting conceptual question here that has to be talked about. I guess I'll leave that kind of to another chabur, other chaburas that come up to it. But I agree that it certainly, you know, there's a lot of very interesting conceptual framing here that has to be thought of in this question. Anyway, sorry, I didn't finish my thought. But apparently there are some countries, apparently in like Scotland and South Africa, there is like a separate legal framework for neighborly laws. And there are like significant differences in terms of the way that one neighbor can, you know, sue another. That's different from the way that a person, you know, a few blocks down can treat that same person on the street. But you can look it up. It's so that might be an interesting an interesting type of like parallel of some sort. Okay, so lalacha, what ends up happening, lalacha, is that we have the Shulchan Aruch. I want to just say the Shulchan Aruch, source number 22. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Chanushi b'chatzer yechol mashkinin mchol piado v'lachmarlo ein anu yecholim lishan mikol anichasim v'nichnasim v'ayotzim ela osim lachto b'chanuso u'mocher l'ashuk." אבל אינם יכולים למחות ביד ולומר, אין אנו יכולים לשם מכל הפטיש ומכל הרחיים, אחר שכבר יחזיק לסוכן, ולא מיכלו בידו. The Shulchan Aruch paskins almost verbatim the language of the Rambam.
So wait, the stores all 9 to 5, people still don't buy the can't sleep?
Well, yeah, I want to back to that just a second. Yeah, I agree. The Rambam's Shita is fascinating. We'll come back to Rambam in a second. The Ramah, though, disagrees. V'yesh omrim, dechol ma she'oseh b'chanuto b'beito, afil l'chatchila einan yecholim l'mchot. The Ramah seems to paskin, probably most similarly to the Mordechai, that the distinction here is between in the house versus outside of the house. That seems to be the way to paskin, which lalacha then would mean that if you paskin like the Ramah, when it comes to some type of neighborly disturbance, your neighbor is making some type of noise, according to the Ramah, under certain circumstances, your neighbor certainly would have the right to do so. Maybe it's in the house, everything would be allowed. Maybe it's, you know, a question of the neighbor versus other people. You know, you can read the Ramah a little bit differently. Probably, I think the simplest reading is it's kind of like the Mordechai in the house versus outside the house, which would mean then that in the house, you can kind of make whatever noise you want. I mean, at least according to this, taking it to this logical extension, you can blast music at, you know, middle of the night. It wouldn't be a problem. You know, according to this, as long as it's within your house. On the other hand, though, according to the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rambam, it would seem to be that as if you don't have a chazaka, then you can always protest. So almost no matter what, any noise, and it seems to be like any noise. It doesn't seem to be limited to any particular type of noise, because he says that, you know, for anything. Sounds like even, you know, children making noise, you could protest. So the question somebody asked about, like, a new child being born, sounds like you could protest, say like, hey, no children in this neighborhood. You know, I refuse to have this. Certainly, that seems to be the way to read. There's no limitation explicit.
You might have to say it in advance. If you're a landlord, you can say in advance, no children in this apartment. As opposed to, you rent a young couple and the wife is pregnant. What were you thinking when you rented the apartment?
Sure, well, maybe, you know, maybe the tenant would have certain complaints they can make against the landlord. But in terms of the other tenant could still complain that, hey, I don't want this noise around me. I don't want to be bothered by kids. As long as the kids have no chazaka, according to the Rambam, it seems to be that you can always protest. Certainly the simplest reading. I mean,
so there's no idea of a chazaka of childbearing young couples.
I mean, you could talk about maybe certain neighborhoods would have a certain chazaka. I think, at that point, you're probably talking about minhag. You're probably talking about slightly different halakhic contexts. You know, maybe this particular house. I certainly, you know, if the house above you has had a bunch of children, now a new child is born, I don't think it's such a stretch to say, like, they have a chazaka that they can have children around, even if this new child is slightly more wild than the previous children. You know, but I don't think it's the same thing as saying that, you know, there's a chazaka generally just because people, you know, have children. You know, you live in, you know, Century Village in Florida, I don't think you expect to have children around. So that's certainly I think that's like the simplest reading of the Rambam. I mentioned as inside the Sma, by the way, seems to slowly be paskin like the Ramah. Not so surprising. What I would suggest, though, and this is, you know, an argument, you don't have to accept it, but certainly the way that Huskim, I haven't seen any Psak Din that disagrees with this reading, which is that in practice, when it comes to Hilchot Nezikin, no one ever really takes these, like, essentialist or, like, extreme views. No one actually ends up taking these, like, legal theories to the, you know, to the extent that they should, you know, if you follow them consistently. Instead, there's always some type of like balance that's created for various reasons. And part of that has to really do with the question that kind of really you know, is like the question without Hilchot Nezikin, which is really the question of like, what is Hilchot Nezikin? What type of damages are we talking about? Is this real nezek? Is it a question of this neighborly relationship
Well,
question?
Exactly. Roy Joe Harrison, I don't know if you listened to the recording, wrote Elsher Weiss. That was a major point. It's not really Nezikin. It's, he used really the word, it was Azorim, having a total one society have balance. Balancing one's rights. That's exactly
Yeah,
what
well, I
I'm
think his
saying.
point is a balance between people, between property owner and neighbors in terms of the noise, the acceptable noise levels.
Right, that's not where you're going.
No, I'm saying something that's certainly, one of the major questions within Hilchot Nezikin. I don't want to go too much into that particular question because that's,
Okay.
I think it's deserving of it, like its own, its own limud. But certainly it's true that it comes up a lot in those type of questions. So I just quoted, for instance, I mean, it's a little bit different. I'm not saying it's the same thing. It's a little different. He's talking about it. He seems to be conceptualizing it as nezek, not just as like neighborly question, hilchot shchenim. But the Nesivos, for instance, in his own argument, on source number 24, this is like a really important Nesivos everyone quotes about Perek LeYachpor, is that he differentiates between standard nezikin of avot dalot nezikin, between that and the questions of Perek LeYachpor. That Perek LeYachpor, there the question that keeps coming about is a question of like what are the basic things that you can do in your own property, and to some extent, if we didn't allow you to do certain things because we were concerned, overly concerned with the damage it would cause to your neighbors, then you wouldn't be able to have, you wouldn't be able to use your property at all. If every time, if you weren't allowed to have children in the house making noise, so then children would have nowhere to live. Like no, you would have as a parent nowhere to buy a house. So you'd be stuck. So what do you do at that point? Like you just nowhere to live. So at some point, and this is true, not just for noise, this is really a question of, all of Hilchot Nezikin, all of Hilchot Nezikei Shchenim. And so part of this question becomes a question of, how do you balance it? What exactly are the questions in terms of balancing? Are we looking for balance here, or are we looking for a question of whose property rights are more important? I'm not sure balance is always the right question here. I mean, I think, for instance, the Nisivos and the way that he frames it, he still seems to frame it as Nezek. He's not saying this isn't Nezikin, as opposed to like Rav Asher Weiss or a bunch of like other Achronim, they want to argue that all of Hilchot Nezikin, it's not really Nezikin. It doesn't belong as part of Hilchot as Mazik. Really, it's a totally different type of halacha that relates to Hilchot Shchenim, and it has its own separate rules and its own separate balances that relate to somehow to Nezikin. But it's not really based on Nezik. It's not actually Nezik because it's mostly Grumma. It's not really the typical form of Nezik. The,
Property mixed up with property law,
yeah.
it's not support.
Yeah, as opposed to the way Nisibo says that Nisibo seems to be doesn't seem to be taking that far. He actually seems to be talking about the fact that people have to own property, but he still seems to be referring to the issue here as a question of mazik, of question of are you actually, tort law, are you actually damaging or not? Yeah.
The question in the Rambam or in the within the Rambam, in the Chazaka, just like the Gemara has Grumman ben Nezikin Aser or Sasser ben Mazik, should it be Aser to create be able to create this Chazaka? The first time he makes this noise, he was Mazik Hishkin. They could be Mokel, but just like someone, if they steal or if they punch somebody, the guy could be Mokel, but he did an Aveira. So, is that a Shaila for the Rambam that? We're only talking about Rishayim that did these mean chazak, but really this is always us.
So it's not so.
If you assume like Rashi Weiss, it's not a question, but if you assume like a silos, it's Nezek, so yes,
Right.
that
So
would.
part of the question here is, I mean, this is a question. I think it sounds like Rabbi Bach is going to give a chibur on this, or
What?
well, I don't know if this particular chibur, but certainly I think we're going to talk about from the what chazaka here even means. How can you make a chazaka of something that seems like an iser? It can't be a can't be a, you can't have a chazaka that I'm allowed to steal from my neighbors. Certainly, I think that's a real question. If you think that, like the Nisibos seems saying it's real, that's like, how can that happen? But you'll have to say maybe it's not, maybe even it's within the parsha of Nezek, but it's not really Nezek. It's still different, right? Even this question of are you actually over a lav? Well, what lav are you over? Right? Because this isn't clear. This is certainly not direct Nezek. It's probably not even Garmi. Most of these cases are Grumma. And are you even chayav a lav? So there's discussion. You know, what's the makor for Nizkei Shechinim? Is Nizkei Shechinim with the Raita, the Rabbanan? What the different sources are? Is it Lota Grum Pnei Ish? Is Atal Yecha Kamocha? Different Rishon give different suggestions in terms of what exactly the makor is. But absolutely, like this question, you know, keeps coming around in terms of absolutely, if you think that it is real Nezek, how can Chazaka be ever relevant? Or how can we even allow it? Right? Are you allowed to take advantage of your neighbor in this way? I think that's like one of the questions Nizkei Shechinim. Right, that kind of comes out. Like, is it just being a good person? You know, is it just being mida chasidus to not, you know, make this noise or do this type of thing that bothers your neighbors? Or no, are you really an ikar den allowed to do it unless someone starts to be mocha? Yeah, I think it's a question that that comes up all the time, and I imagine we're gonna talk all zman about this. Okay, I wanna in terms of this topic of noise specifically, I want to talk just a few more things, which I think are very much worth mentioning. Number one, when it comes to location, we've been talking a little bit about location in terms of neighbor location. So what's interesting is that there is actually a discussion about, you know, what type of neighbors are we speaking about? So for instance, the Maral Bach and the Divrei Chaim, they both argue that when we're talking about neighbors here, in terms of your ability to be mocha or create chazaka or anything of the like, we're definitely talking about people who share a chatzer, or, you know, and arguably whatever equivalent of a chatzer nowadays is that, like a stairwell or whatever. We can, you know, argue about exactly what the equivalent nowadays is, but that's different from a neighbor who, you know, has who might be right next door, but there's a fence separating you, and maybe they have a separate opening into Rishus Rabbim. And the way that the Maral Bach says explicitly, that case, we're not going to be concerned about, you're not going to have the same ability to be mocha, which certainly comes back to this question of, you know, what exactly are we dealing with Nizkei Shechinim? If you're talking about real Nezek, it doesn't really matter. Why should it really matter if you happen to be actual neighbors, you know, in terms of, you know, if I can hear you and you're damaging me in some way because I hear you or because of smell or whatever you're doing. So why does it make a difference if I live, you know, there's a fence over me or not? Like, either way, I'm still damaged.
The assumption, though, that the people living on the chatzer are co-owners of the chatzer, that's why?
Yeah, there seems to be some type of shared ownership.
Right, so that's why.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, I agree. No, that's what I'm saying. So it's not just about being real, Nez. Like, it seems to be about, there's something that, right. Yeah, I think the Maral Bach and anyone who makes this type of distinction between where the Nezek is and if you're just over the street, it's no longer a problem, has to be talking about this whole sugya is about property rights and not simply about, you know, Nezikin or, you know, torts. You have to kind of take that approach. Otherwise, it doesn't really make any sense. I will mention that there is kind of, just in terms of like Ptak, the Bitrei Tshuva quotes from the Levush that the other way is also true. In terms of exclusion, that while it's true that we can have a debate that maybe you can be mocha or maybe sometimes you can get a chazaka or some type of things that you would be allowed to make noise out in, you know, when you're sharing a chatzer, but if you're sharing the same apartment, so then you're not allowed to have, you won't create these chazakot, and you can always kind of protest. And that, you know, if you live kind of in tight quarters, the same rules in terms of noise doesn't necessarily apply, or he's actually does, not just noise, he's actually talking about all sorts of other Nizkei Shechinim. So it's an interesting, you know, there's an interesting, yeah, I guess that's just like an interesting question in terms of like the size, which I think certainly would play into question of property rights a lot more than it does necessarily about just a question of, you know, how much noise or how much damage. Although you could certainly read the whole sugya that way, that, you know, all these distinctions between where the damage is causing is really about the quantity, that, you know, if I live right next to you, on top of you, of course, that could be more damaging than someone who lives, you know, next door. And that's going to be less damaging, more damaging than someone who lives across the street. So it's certainly one way to read the sugya, but, you know, I think perhaps the dominant way, at least according to these positions, these Rishonim, or Achronim, would really be to focus much on property rights. Okay, I know I'm taking some time. I definitely have to mention the Rivash. So I'm going to mention the Rivash position, because everything until now, at least according for Ashkenazim, let's say for Ashkenazim, if you assume, you know, that the simple reading of the Ramah, you are allowed to make whatever noise you want, maybe within your house, right? There seems to be that's always true. The Ramah, though, does quote the position of the Rivash, The Rivash's case is, it's important to read it inside because I want to actually say something about the Rivash, which, yeah. So the Rivash has a whole case about different people sharing a wall, and he makes the following point at some point in the middle of it. The third argument that one of the Bali Din was arguing, Shetan Ruvin mitnei choli ishto shemazikla birosha v'gamzu tana gedola. That the noise that you're doing, from correctly, it's noise from in the case, it's noise from I think it's like a Reichheim of some sort. I actually don't remember exactly what the noise, what exactly the machine in the tshuva is, but some type of noise machine. The noise that that's created is being mazik, the wife of the neighbor. This case, according to the Rivash, is different. When the person is sick, at that point, you no longer have the same type of argument that you can't complain. If this is damaging you, you are sick, this noise is disturbing you, then you do have more recourse. You can be mocha. And the source for the Rivash is based on his reading of the Gemara on Daf Chaf Bet Amud Bet, where the Gemara there quotes a story about Rav Yosef, that Rav Yosef was had some palm trees on the year's property, and certain doctors would use it as a place for bloodletting. Ravens would be attracted to the bloodletting, and by doing so, they'd ruin, I guess, both the property, and it would also make some very disturbing noise. It's just the way that Rashi certainly reads it, make some type of disturbing noise. And the Gemara says, the Rugose says, you have to stop. You can't keep bloodletting on this property. They say, why not? It's only Grumma. And the Gemara concludes that even though usually it's true for Grumma, in this case, Kikutru Beta Kise Damuli, this case for me is similar to these other types of really bad damage because I am, it's the way that we're trying to explain it, I'm some type of, I have my, I'm like an istinist of some sort. I have my own medical issues. And so I'm able to make this taina, despite having a chazaka, despite the fact that maybe you have the right to make this noise, I can indeed protest because I have this type of illness. So this type of position of the Rivash, essentially, in the Ramat Paskins this way, the Rivash essentially, shifts the balance almost totally the other side. Because if beforehand, at least for Ashkenazim, the complaint was as long as it's, indoors, or as long as it's something which is, has to be done in the house, it's normal type of behavior, or whatever exactly Rishon position you take, as long as it's something normal, you can do it, and your neighbor can't protest. Here, according to the Rivash, seemingly any time something is disturbing and you can make a claim that I'm sick, then make that complaint. And that complaint's fairly easy. I mean, most people who complain about noise will say hey, I'm sorry that you're not sensitive to it, but I'm sensitive to it. And therefore, I'm istinist to this noise. Every time your kids slam the door, this really bothers me and it makes my heart race. And, I'm sure this type of rhetoric can be, heard plenty. So in terms of, once we're talking about istinus and this subjective status in terms of sickness, this can, this kind of changes the balance entirely, where now you're almost limited to ever make any noise on your property if someone wants to complain. So the Rivash himself, there are a few different ways that Achron had dealt with this. Number one, the Aruch HaShulchan points out, at least the way his psak is, that you have to have a demonstrable illness of some sort. You need to be able to prove that this type of noise really damages you. You have to quote his source number 33, Shu Itnis O Chole V'Hu In B'Chotol Lisbol. Adam, you have to kind of really demonstrate it. I mean, you have to show some Achron talk about sending a doctor's note or bringing some type of other medical documentation that demonstrates this isn't just this isn't this can be demonstrated, real damage, a real problem, not just invented. So that's kind of one way to kind of limit the Rivash's impact. The second way, which is the most common way, that many quote is the position of the Chazon Ish. And we mentioned it earlier, but it's worth looking at the Chazon Ish again, because this is the way that most Basi didn't end up passing on most of these noise related issues, which is he says as follows. Nireh, the source number 34. Nireh de'ein diber rivash ela be'oseh davar she'eino ikar dira. Mo be'oseh ariga v'kiyotze bazeh. She'ein ze matsuei b'chol adam ve'lo b'rov b'nei adam. Aval, im oseh dvarim sh'rov b'nei adam osim, ulefamim tashmisha v'dibura mashmiya kol sh'mafriya t'choleh, eino yachol limkot af im acholeh kadam. V'rashai adam livnot bayit itel chaviro, lachnise et ha'olalim v'ayonkim she'otzolkim b'layla, ve'ein chaviro yachol la'akiv alav, v'harei eino chayav l'seit midirato. In other words, the Chazon Ish suggests, even according to the Rivash, the only type of thing that even a chola can complain about are things which are not ikar dira, things which are essential domestic needs, things which are essentially, you know, typical or essential household needs that can't be done other ways. This is what everyone does in their home, such as raise children, that even an ill person cannot seemingly complain about, according to the Chazon Ish. So at that point, according to the Chazon Ish, you are severely limiting the practicality of the Rivash. Effectively, the Rivash only applies to cases where it's something which is borderline that, you know, maybe it's in the house, you maybe could do it somewhere else, or maybe some people do other places, but it's kind of these like borderline cases. That's the only case where we really talk about this whole concept of chola, where it really be applicable. La'aniyut da'ati, I would argue that none of this is relevant to explain the Rivash. Because the way the Rivash seems to say this whole case is that the case here we're talking about is not the same type of damage that everyone's kind of assuming. If you take a look at the way the Rivash talks about it, if he talks about that, I'm reading it again, verse 29. Shetan Ruven Nipnei Chol Ishto Shemazik La Berosha. That this noise is causing her damage. And she is sick. And Kevan Sheisha Zu Muchzeket Bechola Ein Lecha Giri Gadol Mizeh. Since she is sick, there is no greater type of damage. What I'd argue is that the Rivash might be saying that this whole, it's not about all of these assumptions or kind of the need what's kind of propelling, you know, the Chazon Ish to give his Shita and the Aruch HaShulchan and all these various limitations, is because we're kind of assuming that any neighbor can just protest and say like, hey, I'm sick, I don't want this noise to happen. But the way that Rivash seems to talk about this case is it's not just any type of damage. We're talking about specifically nezek. It has to be some type of tort. And tort damage is a much higher level of damage than, you know, disturbance of noises. There's a, you have to maybe we can talk about exactly where that line is drawn, but maybe you have to demonstrate some type of financial, implications. Maybe you have to, you know, the level of proof you have to demonstrate to show that it's real damage is distinct from the amount of damage that we're talking about in most of these nezek of noises. It's not really the same type of damage. And in fact, I believe that's what
you we've already figured out that you can't get damages from blow a chauffeur in someone's ear unless you touch them. This is a headache.
Absolutely. That's the nezek. You can't get any money out of with blowing an ear. You were talking about lechachila and having a mechah preventing them.
So you might be able to. I mean, you also might be able to protest that my property value has gone down, which is the way. We're going to talk about property value damages. We could talk about some type of permanent damage that's taking place to my kids of some sort. Yeah, I mean,
When we say that she's going to suffer nezek to her in her to her head, we don't literally mean nezek. That means
yes.
Something.
Okay. There's nezek that you can't get paid for, but there's nezek.
Yeah, or maybe he believes, I mean, we can talk about this one term. Maybe Rash is something that is tangible. Rash is sound waves after all that move. I mean, I think it's a farther out. I think it probably just serves different types of Nezek. But,
sure, right.
But yeah, it's definitely an interesting question, but I certainly think even Lermaro Bach himself, Lermaro Bach quotes this Rivash, and he has this whole long Chita Shuva, which we quoted earlier. He's the one who has suggested that the distinction between when you can make noise and can't make noise is whether it's necessary, whether you have no alternative place to go. it's what's quoted by the Chatam Sofer. And so at some point he asked, what about the Rivash's question about the Chole? Why isn't that relevant in my case as well? And it's not entirely clear to me what the difference is, other than it sounds like he's saying this isn't really Nezek. That the difference between my case and the case of the Rivash is that Rivash's case is real Nezek, while my case is not really Nezek. I agree, your question still stands in terms of what's...
Yeah, differences
between pain and...
Mazik love of Russia sounds like actual harm.
Yeah, it could be real harm. You could create medical damage to someone by, you know, creating...
We already said no.
Yeah, you can make the person lose their hearing and you won't have to pay. They'll be dead forever and you won't have to pay a penny. But that's in Hilfo's Kavuchovel. That's correct. But here we're talking about stopping them from coming, from stopping them from doing this in the future.
Yeah, here we're not talking about pain, we're talking about mimocha. Talking about whether this is enough financial grounds to be, you know, to, I guess, yeah, stop their behavior.
Underlying. Property rights.
Yeah.
Enjoy
yeah.
Property or enjoy it, or we're dealing with elimination of nuisance, which may or may not be stopped. Nuisance also has a lot. That's the two in the reverse, the two ways of running the reverse. If you read it literally, it sounds to me it's just the reverse. To start with the Sefer Hasidim. Also, although in Libra and Shun, Nazareth had a place where Tsar and Nazareth. It's an issue. I'm not allowed to cause aggravation. Is it is it something else? That's the simplest way to read the reverse. I don't think the Yitzchak has an issue with the reverse. I think the Chazon Ish we're dealing here with the equivalent of servitude. Some things rise to level of servitude, and some don't rise to level of servitude. And particularly dealing with the Chotzer, with Shechemim, there's some type of Tavach and Nishtachim. You can't force me, I never agreed to enter this, whatever this is, what they call these things, or a property owner association. I never agreed to become this member of this association to refrain from doing things for which it will happen. Other things like that you can legislate, and you bylaws, whatever you want, not to force me to. And now we'll have to talk about what are the Gedarim and what are the limits.
Yeah, like I don't want Matt to have drum lessons after 8 o'clock.
I don't want what?
Drum lessons.
Drum lessons. I'm not sure. Whatever. Now we have to fit it into this matrix of one type or another. It's very difficult. There seems to be a lot of inconsistency of trying to get through it.
Yeah, so this actually kind of gets me to kind of like the wrap-up conclusion, which is that, in fact, if you take this sugya, you know, the way that, like, if you follow this lukim the way that the Rishonim make it, or the Chronim even suggested, and you follow logical exclusion, you get to these, you know, positions where, you know, either you can say that, you know, you're allowed to do whatever damage you want, and, you know, whatever noise you in your property, you can make whatever noise you want, or if it's necessary, you can make whatever noise you want. Or, you know, or you can never make noise you want outside in your chatzer. You can all these, you know, very, I guess, shitati positions. But the way that the Psak Din ends up working is that it never works that way. I mean, I've yet to see the Psak where it actually works that way. Instead, it's almost always based on, like, the Dayan looking at considering the cases and trying to really create this balance. And part of it, I think, certainly stems from this Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish really has a lot of influence, in this. The Chazon Ish explicitly, when it comes to all of her Chakot Nezikin, describes it in this way, that it's, the whole thing is creating this balance between various property owners in terms of creating the ability to use your property and then the other person not being damaged. It's all about this balance. And the Chazon Ish seems to be saying kind of the same thing's true when it comes to noise. We're also trying to create a balance. If something which is in his balance is that if it's a normal behavior in the house, then it's allowed. Things which are abnormal behavior or behavior that could be, you know, expected reasonably to be done elsewhere, then that could be done somewhere else. And all of that, once you're talking about this type of reasonableness, so then it becomes, you know, this whole sugya becomes, well, there's like no real rules. It becomes very much, it becomes very much like every case its own case. You'll have, yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, I'll read. I read like a mil. I read. I don't know. I read probably dozens of tshuvas about like air conditioners, and like every rishon, every achron comes up with a, or talked in comes up with a slightly different logic, and there's no real consistency here because they're all talking about like the reasonableness of this particular neighborhood and the way that this particular dayan sees it. I'll give you an example where it comes up. There's a discussion about what?
That may be true.
Oh, well, that's something I leave to you. Yeah. I'll give you an example where this comes up. There's discussion about air conditioning. Air conditioners are classic. You know, in Israel, they can be very loud, and for the communities, people, you know, especially live on top of each other. And so there's discussions about what if the air conditioner, you know, is the condenser is outside, right? Because that's where most condensers are. They're not in the house. They're outside the house. And that's where most of the noise is coming. And so if you read the Ramah, it sounds like the distinction was between inside the house versus outside the house. So now is the condenser considered inside the house or outside the house? So some Achronim or some Saki Din are like, oh, well, you know what? It's outside the house. So there are limitations. We're going to put real limitations on it. Other Saki Din are like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, it's outside the house, but like it's really attached to inside the house. It's a type of inside the house type thing. You know, they start debating almost like we're talking like the fourth parak of Batra, like is it inside the house, outside the house? It was like all these debates.
Put my hand out,
so. Yeah, no, it sounds like you're talking about the first parak of Shabbos, like in terms of outside. That's what some of these debates become, and it really becomes this like question of like really what the Dayan sees instead of being, you know, more essentially about property rights. That doesn't, you know, if it really was about property rights, they wouldn't be talking about these same, like that's not the way that they're talking about this sugya. Or I'll give you another explanation where this comes up a lot, very practically. One of the questions that I guess Bati Din deal with a lot is when we're talking about solving noise issues, do we suggest that we should differentiate between what hours the noise is being created? Meaning like sleep hours, whether that sleep hours are at night, but also more specifically in the mid-afternoon, the nice like siesta hour, are there certain rules or can you impose certain requirements on your neighbor to require certain noises? And so what's interesting is, for instance, some Achronim explicitly say, for instance, if you want to take a look, the Kesef HaKachim has a whole piece, I quoted a small part of it, where he says explicitly he thinks that hours shouldn't ever be relevant. Because once we're talking about property rights, well, if I have the right to sell, I have the right to sell always. What's the difference? I can have my store open in the middle of the night. There's no... Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can do whatever I want. Not only that, but I don't know if he said that, if I quoted it here, but I, Rav Asher Weiss, I saw one of his writing, one of his tshuvos, makes the following more practical point in terms of Dayanus, which I thought was interesting, where he argues that once a Dayanim are going to start debating about hours, you can do that. But it's not a very good solution because then what happens is that neighbors start policing each other over what hours. Oh, it's 10:01 on my cell phone here. I'm checking the time. Now I'm going to call the police or whatever it is and, you know, and report to you. And you start like having these like minute debates in practice, which the hour split doesn't actually end up helping. That's his argument practically. I'm not sure, you know, if that means that you shouldn't ever do it. But that's his argument. Although then I saw another tshuvot. It ends in the paskening that in some things we split between the hours. If it's at night, oh, then be more reasonable. You can do it during the day. So you should, you know, your kids should be quieter at night.
When is night?
When is night? So it depends on the neighborhood and it's every.
There are ways of dealing with this. You have a co op which has bylaws and the everybody, when they buy an apartment, there's a sign on the hooky. Those are the hooky I buy to finish. Because at that, the book in the starts with that, then you start with a property explanation.
I think Abed Asri says that we should solve all these problems by getting together and agreeing on the rules.
He's got a theory here.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is...
There is no such thing as black letter law, which doesn't have a theory. You have to understand what's governing it. There could be differences of opinion too, but you have to have a theory that can be applied in a particular situation. And you can disagree where it's applicable. It could be a
an area which is not black and white. It's gray, but you have to start with a theory, otherwise they'll get any sense of it.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll be honest. Reading this, learning this sogya, I mean, it was interesting to learn the different shittos, but halachas, like, you read these tshuvos. I mean, this is just my personal reading. I'm reading through all these different psakei din, and they quote the sogya, and everyone quotes the sogya. There's small nuances here and there, and then they end up like ignoring everything they said for the last three pages and just saying like, okay, here's what I think. They quote the Chazon Ish that it comes to Einei Hadayon, and then they say like, this is what makes sense to me. And it's psak after psak after psak that does the exact same thing.
That's not how you should.
And some psaki din even quote. I even saw they quote the previous cases. Like one, I saw a few cases where they said like, "Oh, I know that I paskined a different way, like previously, like a year ago." And they say like, "Oh, the difference is like in some like minor, very technical difference that there's no real svar. It's just kind of like the Einei Hadayon sees it differently, you know." And it's. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to hear if you have, like, you know, real theories, but it sounds to me like in terms of the way that it's Paskin, it's really just Paskin in terms of creating this balance that's very much up in the air. And, you know, I tried beginning of this whole shiur by showing that at least within Rishonim, there are clear theories. You know, we could define more carefully these different theories in terms of in the house versus out of the house, in terms of like, is your property shared property versus individualized owned property? We can differentiate between cases of where, you know, in terms of what types of financial needs we're talking about. Is it something that's necessary and needed versus something which is, you know, maybe more is an alternative in terms of societal practice? Maybe you could have your store somewhere else. We could differentiate between, you know, cases where the noise is being created by owners of the house, domestics, versus people who live outside, and whether your rights as property owner extend to other people as well. You know, you can make all these distinctions, and everyone quotes them and shown them, but at least in my, you know, my recollection, it seems like everyone just says, like, the Chazon Ish says do this, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to say, here's the Einei Hadayon, and this is the Psak. So, yeah. So in some ways, I also was frustrated. I'll be honest. I also was a little frustrated with this. Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's fun, how, but it's...
That's life does law. That's not how the road does law. I'm saying, the I assume what you were saying before is that you would have a working theory and
we
not...
don't have judgment. We have judgment applying the correct
All right, either way, those are my thoughts.
So what is the explanation of what he's seeing?
No, he's saying yes.
That's
the first thing. Right? The only way is to work back with the types.